This is the Financial Sense News Hour. With the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Leffler, sitting in for Kathleen Harris, who's on vacation this week. Today, as our guest on the program, we will talk to Dr. Drew Collins about the issue of heart disease. And you know, Jim, I had a very good friend of mine who I had over for dinner one night, and I said, have you checked your cholesterol lately, and are you following that? He said, oh, well, yeah, I know it's a little high, and blah, 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 blah. A week later, he had a serious heart attack, which then damaged his kidneys, and he's on dialysis now. So this is something to take seriously. You can prevent this disease if you work at it. We'll talk to Dr. Drew Collins about that very situation, because it will play a role in your longevity. Jim.
Well, what we're going to do in today's program is we're going to talk about three big financial decisions that you are going to make in your lifetime. Now, if you're married, probably the first big one you're going to make is, should we buy a home? If you're married and planning a family, then it's college, and then eventually your retirement. Now, a lot depends on when you start. Obviously, the earlier the better. And getting started, one of the problems you have is competing financial goals. You know, you have a budget. You're starting out. Okay, you want to put down or save some money for a down payment on a house. You're thinking of starting a family. Okay, you have to start thinking about the kids' education and then, of course, your own retirement. And one of the real key things to consider when you're planning is to prioritize them. Obviously, the first couple of years when you're starting out a family, your goals are going to be different. So your savings are going to be allocated maybe more towards that first home purchase. You start a family, then all of a sudden planning for the kids' college education takes precedent. And then down the road, since you're starting out life, you're thinking, well, retirement's 40 years down the road. The real key is to sit, take a budget, take your savings, and prioritize what those goals are. But the important thing is to have a plan.
Well, the big problem is no plan. And I always like to look at young guys and say, well, you think you've got a lot of time. Let me clue you. It's going to go by very fast. And what we're seeing is that our expenses are greater than people have been expecting. Look at college, for example. Retirement, you're going to have to be more self-reliant. It's very clear that the pension situation and or even the Social Security situation is still not going to be very certain in the future. No guaranteed pensions, defined benefit plans. People are living longer, and health care factors, especially under the new Affordable Health Care Act under Obamacare, but that's even uncertain. So we live in an age of uncertainty. There's a new Health and Human Services study that shows that under the Silver Plan, under the Affordable Health Care Act, you're going to see increases of $1,300 by about 2019. That's for an individual, $4,000 for a family. There are going to be spikes in healthcare costs all around by 2017 due to changes in the essential benefit requirements. Reinsurance is going to expire, and the insurance companies can't bill the government, which means everybody winds up being on their own. Again, taxpayers will no longer be on the hook, and individuals will be there having to pay, which is going to put to death the whole idea that this started on. Remember, Jim, back in 2008, of being free healthcare. That's what a lot of people kept pushing this for. Well, we want free healthcare, you know? Well, it's not going to be. And there will also be a rise of uninsured people as employers drop plans and as the government plan becomes unaffordable for people under the Affordable Health Care Act. So they're uncertain waters, Jim, but we have to swim in them.
It is what it is. And that's why I want to focus on two of those three big decisions, the house, college, and retirement. I want to focus on education and retirement. You know, we'll do another show on real estate. Last week, we talked about college, as many of you are having children that are either graduating from grade school or college this week. So I want to move in depth. You know, it's interesting, John, there was a new Federal Reserve study out of the Federal Reserve of Cleveland, and they talked about a situation in the job market today where workers with particular skills are losing ground because of changing technology, which reduces the demand for those skills, while other workers, especially those that have skills in engineering and manufacturing, are experiencing a surge not only of demand for their skills, but also pay increases. And what the Fed is talking about is job polarization has become a factor in our market right now. You heard about this growing wealth disparity. A lot of it has to do with education and skill sets, and it's becoming more pronounced. In 1976, for example, routine occupations constituted almost two-thirds of employment in this country. By 2013, that had dropped down to about 50%. So we're seeing more ground given, more things that are routine are being replaced by robots, where abstract skills are a growing demand in this country and employers are willing to pay for it. So the number one priority for a parent and a child that you're going to put through school or putting together money for a college education is to research the field that you're going to go into. In other words, if you're going to go to college and spend the bucks for that, you want to make sure that when you get out of college, you've got a job that is commensurate with what you paid for your education. For example, last week we did a case study of a couple that had a daughter, Jennifer, who wanted to go to UCLA, but she wanted to become a teacher. And we were looking at only $30,000 of money that has been set aside, mainly gifts through her mother's parents, versus a $200,000 education. So the decision was made to go to a junior college. So you want to make sure when you are thinking of college planning, you want to take a look at what kind of skill set, what are you looking to get from that degree, and will that degree enable you to have a job when you get out? And you want to research this. You want to talk to employers, talk to headhunters, talk about what are companies looking for. And if possible, you know, my kids did this, try an internship. I had a son who at one time he was thinking he was going to be a vet. He interned with a veterinarian, decided that wasn't what he wanted to do, and then had an internship in the drug research department at Pfizer during the summer before he figured out what he wanted to get in terms of his degree. So really find out the demand for the field, not just thinking, okay, I'm going to go to college, we're going to set some money aside. You need to do more than that.
Well, I know, Jim, you advocate working after high school. Remember Maynard G. Krebs from Dobie Gillis back in Theories? Work! He didn't want to work. Junior college will give you the basics, and online colleges can reduce your costs. I know what I did, Jim, for example, to avoid running up piles of debt. I went to college during the day, and I was an announcer at a classical radio station at night. And so, you know, you put on long pieces, find a Beethoven or Haydn symphony, and you can get a lot of studying done during that time while you're listening to the music. So I came out of college virtually debt-free. You want to have cash flow positive rather than debt-ridden. You know, there's a lot of complaint now about the people who have run up huge amounts of debt, and there's a lot of talk about forgiveness and this and that because there are no jobs, blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, I say, well, you didn't have to run that debt up. You could have worked out something different if you had worked at it. You know, and of course, these are complicated and it's different for every different person. But you did do that, you know. Anyway, there's a major difference here, starting out life in the hole versus on a positive side where you may not be rich, but at least you don't owe anybody anything and you can begin building from there.
Yeah, there was a new study that just came out, and next to mortgage loans, which are about $9.4 trillion in this country, John, the second highest level of debt is student loans now, which now exceed over $1 trillion. In fact, here's one, folks. The 2014 graduating class in this country is the most indebted class in history. And here's another statistic, and this gets back to the point about researching your job, and that is unemployment rate is 11% for individuals aged 20 to 24. In other words, 1 out of 10 are unable to find a job out of college. The ninja generation, no income, no job, or assets. And as you mentioned, there is no mechanism for forgiveness like mortgage debt. And the statistic right now, the average debt of students graduating is $29,500. The average salary is $45,327. So you really do need to research your occupation and find out where the demand is. And you want to get yourself and change the paradigm of work versus debt accumulation. in thinking about junior college, especially for those 101, 201 courses, John? Do you remember taking those at college? I remember taking mine. I remember at Arizona State, gosh, there was one class we took in an auditorium. John, there must have been several hundred students in the class. So, you know, something at a junior college where you might get smaller classrooms. And also think of online education. I have a daughter-in-law who just got her master's degree in engineering, sponsored by the company she worked at, Northrop Grumman. And she got that online. It was so much cheaper and easier because the company would only pay for so much when it came to an education. So online education plus work, which helps to reverse the debt spiral. So in starting out your life with a major debt burden, you could be cash flow positive.
This involves a major rethink for parents as well, because kids need to shoulder some of the burden now of what they're running up. There's work that will do that. Junior college really minimizes that. We did that, Jim, for all three of our kids. They went to junior college first and then on to upper level classes and then on to graduate work. And by doing it that way, first of all, they were able to ease into the college environment because we homeschooled. And so when they graduated from high school, then they went to the junior college and they were able to still live at home, go to the junior college, pick up all the basic courses, and then later on move on. As a matter of fact, one of our sons was able to, during the summer, come home from his upper level college and take some extra courses at the junior college that he needed to transfer in because he didn't like what was being offered at his college. So these are all things that will let you minimize cost. Working while you're in college, junior college, and doing a lot online, which our kids did as well.
Yeah, I think, John, this idea, you know, you come out of high school and you go to college for 4 years and take on all of this debt. I think that is going to end. It's becoming too expensive. And, you know, the Fed talked about the stats of this job polarization where a lot of people are going to college, they're getting degrees and can't find a job because what they learned in college isn't preparing them for the job market. And so I always advocate putting money aside for college. But I also recommend that you work part-time, and it's a better approach. I mean, John, you and I, that's how we got our way through school. I worked through school, worked 20 hours a week, had my own little business parking cars at a restaurant where I was able to read my homework assignments at night once I got the cars parked. But I worked my way through college, so I came out of college. I think I only had like a couple thousand dollars worth of debt. So first thing that you want to do is find out where the demand is and then develop a plan to get a degree, whether it's working, part-time, internship, which also makes you more employable. And we're also in a period right now that we are seeing low returns in the market. We're seeing slower wage growth. And the parents and the kids really need to work together on this and reach a compromise because I see so many mistakes that are made today. Parents getting into debt, taking out mortgages, and they're doing this 10, 15 years right before they retire, or kids amassing this huge amount of debt that really, you know, when you think about it, you start out life with the equivalent of almost having a home mortgage before you buy anything. And so I think this is a real big mistake, mortgaging yourself, or by the same token, prioritizing and making sure that you don't forget, folks, that you need to plan for your retirement. We're in the age where we don't have defined benefit pension plans. The government is asking you to pay more and more of your medical expenses. And on Obamacare, those costs are going to start to escalate. So, you know, with stagnant wage growth, with low returns in the market, low interest rates on savers, there was a study that just came out that savers are losing approximately $100 billion a year in foregone interest in this zero interest rate environment. So we're living in different times, and different times require different strategies. And the best way to handle them is have a plan to tackle those goals and needs.
So going down this priority list, Jim, number one, people want to have a home, which is probably for many people going to be one of the larger assets they ever invest in. You need to rethink how you're going to do education. And fortunately, a lot of educators and business types are actually rethinking education as well. So you're not alone in that. You simply have to do the research on it. You do need to move on your retirement plan early on, have a plan with priorities, and be able to shift that plan. We've talked about this in other programs. If things change, then you have to be able to shift to match the changes. Remember that you're going to live longer. Well, assuming you don't listen to Financial Sense News Hour too much.
you need to get a life, if that's what you do.
Yeah, and you're going to spend a lot more on healthcare. That is simply going to go up. I've even noticed, Jim, not only do we have insurance, but we have a medical sharing plan through a religious group. But I've noticed that every 6 months we have to raise our costs there as part of the sharing co-op because the costs are going up to them. They're feeling the very, very same pressure. So it doesn't mean you have to panic either. This is really important to make clear to people. It's a different paradigm, but it doesn't have to be one that you can't navigate. That's important to know.
We talk about planning and we talk about the future. And there's a good reason that we're doing this. A new study out on retirement planning that retiring early could be very detrimental to your health in the sense of you're drawing on your capital sooner, you're not allowing it to accumulate as long, and also medical cost. For example, a couple at age 65, and this is a national study, will spend $220,000 of out-of-pocket expenses during their retirement. It is the biggest issue that is overlooked in retirement planning today. And the fatal mistake is retiring too early, let's say, for example, age 62. The study shows that that $220,000 cost of your retirement goes up by $52,000 just by retiring 3 years early. And don't forget, if you retire too early and work part-time because you find out maybe you don't have enough income, remember, if you want to get full Social Security benefits, it's now age 66 for boomers. So at age 66, you get 100% of your Social Security benefits, and you're not penalized if you have part-time work. And the other thing is the more that you delay that, not only are you allowing your assets to accumulate over a longer period of time, but you're not drawing down on those assets because many people will end up 5-10 years into their retirement because of today's low returns. I mean, folks, let me give you an example, and I've used this before. 5 years ago, you could have got close to 5% on a 2-year treasury note. Today, you're lucky if you get 0.4%. Think of what that means in terms of rates of return. So the other thing too, John, is the fact that people are living longer. The idea is inflation has an impact. It's kind of like a stealth tax. You don't really see it maybe in the first year, but you know, come 5 years from now, you'll say, gosh, this costs so much more. We're spending more on food. We're spending more on gasoline. We're spending more on insurance premiums. Our food bills have gone up. Just about everything in terms of what I call the basic necessities of life. And you have to think about, how are you going to cover these inflationary costs if you have no plan or no means of getting additional income, either through a pension that goes up with inflation, dividends that increase over time, or surplus cash that could get reinvested and create more income?
Well, we have covered the debate that is extant right now inside the retirement planning community. Some people are focused on getting you to retirement, saying, look at the big bundle you've got that we've worked on getting you here. Others try to get you through retirement because you have to recognize that as you retire, you may be in retirement 20, 25, 30 years, depending on the time between you retire and the time you pass away and don't need that anymore. The cookie cutter planners, you have to rethink this whole thing because the problem with cookie cutter planning is that the markets and life and what's going on with central banks, it's not static. And these plans, the cookie cutter plans, which simply say, here's the formula, you know, they pull up their spreadsheet, they dump XYZ into the little slots. They don't take into account changes in economic policy, changes in taxation, financial repression, low interest rates, zero Fed rates, inflation, everything that's going to be involved in our economic life over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, Jim.
Well, you know, this is, once again, John, getting back to something we talk so frequently here on the program is having a plan. And it's shown that 70% of retirees don't have a plan. And having a plan can make the difference between a secure or an unsecure retirement. And also, it'll help you navigate the markets. And I'll give you an example, because one of the things that we've seen since 2009 is about $1.4 trillion of the public's investable dollars went into the bond market at a time the stock market went up nearly 200% with reinvested dividends. And a lot of people, having experienced the downturn of the tech bubble and then the financial crisis, have been shy of going into the markets. And I'd like to throw an example out there in terms of a worst case scenario. Let's say that you started your retirement plan on January 1st, 2008. You put 50% of your portfolio in bonds, let's say laddered bonds. You put 40% in stocks and about 10% in cash. Now let's take a look at the worst case outcome. By March of 2009, when the market had bottomed, you would have been down only 7% in the worst financial crisis we had since the Great Depression. Your bonds of $500,000, they would have been up about 10%. That would have been a gain of about $50,000. Your stocks would have been down about 30%. That would have been a loss of about $120,000. Take the gains from the bonds and the loss from the stocks, the net effect, cash would have been cash. The net effect is you would have been down 7%. Now, here's the best part. Number one, your income from the bonds didn't change, assume you had individual bonds. And during the financial crisis, a lot of the stocks in your portfolio, especially if you bought blue chip stocks like you see in the Dow, would have been increasing their dividends. And that is the difference of having a plan. I mean, you wouldn't leave on a road trip. Let's say you're driving to go see your kids, grandkids. You wouldn't leave on a trip without a GPS or a roadmap. And the problem is too many retirees have no retirement plan. So they're subject to the whims of the market, the media, the latest scare. And, you know, throw in the crisis with life's unexpected, and you can see where it leaves you so vulnerable to things that happen that you have no control over, and also make you subject to, you get more frightened when you don't have a plan as things change. And so having a plan, no matter what the circumstances, gives you a roadmap to handle those challenges in life. And that determines really, when you boil it down, the difference between being secure and unsecure during your retirement years.
We were going to talk about two major financial decisions, which are education and retirement. I think having kids is another major financial decision. Dang, they cost you money before they go out. Anyway, but we'll focus here on education and retirement. Education, you have to think about a job outcome before you even hit school. I know a lot of us, we all sort of wandered into school, I think, at some point. Although I knew I wanted to be in broadcasting right from the start, pretty much. You have to rethink your whole debt versus work paradigm. Retirement, you have to prioritize goals, should do it earlier. Rethink your priorities. This is an ongoing basis. Life is dynamic and fluid. Develop a plan and deal with longevity and medical issues, and design some kind of a portfolio and savings plan that accomplishes those objectives. You do have a lifetime to do it if you're starting earlier, but you do need to start at the beginning of your career start. Let's do something different here. We've told everybody the theory of how this works. Let's draw up a potential plan. We'll take a case study. We'll have two people. We'll call them Mike and Jennifer Hughes and see how they applied these principles. We'll try to do a real world scenario.
This is the case of Mike and Jennifer Hughes. Mike was 37 years old. He works for a major international oil company as a petroleum engineer. His wife, Jennifer, was a stay-at-home mom. This is an interesting case because this is a third-generation client. I started out with Jennifer's grandfather, who was my client in the 80s. He introduced me to Jennifer's father, who was a doctor, and now we're working with the children. So this is actually the third generation of clients, and their father had a plan. He started with me. He wanted to set aside money for his daughter's education, weddings, and also his own retirement. So we started early with a plan, and by starting early, we met those goals. Now, his son-in-law wanted the same thing. You know, we want a plan, and they had specific goals that they had in mind. Now, here's the financial situation. Mike's salary was $200,000 a year plus a bonus. Now, he's working overseas, and as a result, working for a company overseas with an oil company. The oil company picked up his expenses of living, house, car, etc., housing, and education. Now, here's something that one of the advantages is that we have under tax laws, if you work overseas, in 2013, the amount of your income that is exempt from federal income taxes is $97,600. In the year 2010, it was $91,500. So roughly, almost half of Mike's income was exempt from federal income taxes. So we wanted to make the most of that. And on top of that, working for an oil company, his residency was Texas. So he had no state income taxes, and virtually almost half of his salary would be exempt from federal taxes. Now, he's on a five-year deployment, almost think like the military, with the possibility he could be working outside the country for 10 years. So the plan was, number one, maximize the company's 401k plan because there was maximum contributions. Secondly, the company had a deferred compensation program, which was what we wanted to do there is take the bonus that he got each year, put that in deferred comp so to further build up his retirement plan. And then what we were going to do is take his savings. We were going to allocate, which was roughly almost 50% of his income. Two-thirds of that was going to be devoted to retirement and one-third to education. Now, we convinced both Mike and Jennifer that the education environment that I've been talking about is going to be much different today and going forward than, let's say, when Jennifer's father was saving up for her education or Mike's father was saving up for his. And we talked about, for the education fund, we were going to go in blue chip dividend paying stocks, allow those dividends to accumulate, because obviously with today's low interest rates, it didn't make sense to, you know, go in bonds at 2.5%. That wasn't going to do anything. And we were going to set aside a pot, and whatever that pot was going to grow to, that was what was going to be used for education. There was no plan to go into debt, no plan to take out a mortgage. The other thing is eventually their goals were to retire early. They wanted to retire in their 50s. They wanted to retire to Colorado, where Jennifer went to college. John, your wife went to school in Colorado, as mine did. And so they bought a home in Colorado, where eventually, right now it's a rental property, where they eventually want to retire. So the plan itself, put aside, prioritize their early retirement goals, savings for an education, minimizing taxes, which was by default, working overseas was a big plus because almost half of Mike's income would be sheltered from federal taxes. A resident of Texas, there was no state taxes. So really, if he was going to be on deployment overseas for 5 or 10 years, it was like, we're going to salt as much money away as we can. And remember, the key to retirement is compound interest. The earlier you do it, and the longer period of time you have for compounding equals a larger net worth. And since their goals were to retire early, this is how we accomplished it.
So what they did here is they salted away as much as they could on overseas assignments since that income was tax exempt. This was just wise planning. So a third of what they were savings was going to go towards education so that their daughter could use that. Two-thirds of the savings towards retirement. They maximized their company benefits like the 401k and deferred compensation. And the goal there was an early retirement and a bigger nest egg. And those were the goals they started with early on. So this couple had a plan to A, educate their children, and a plan for early retirement. And that was the plan, and you stick with it, making changes as needed. And the basic moral of the story is everybody has different requirements, different income, different goals, but you have to have a plan. And if you have a plan, then you can fit that, and it makes things go a lot easier, especially if things get a little turbulent. You have some reference point to which you can return. Now, coming up next, a very, very important topic that I don't take lightly. I have had a long time of pounding on my colleagues and friends about taking care of their health, especially young guys. I tell them at the gym, you know, you may feel like you're going to live forever now if you're in your 20s, but if you take care of your body now, comma, your body will thank you when you're 40, 50, and 60, rather than pushing it for what you can do to the utmost and blowing things out. And it's just as much to be said, a lot of diseases can be avoided if people simply do what they need to do earlier on, especially if there are genetic predispositions towards certain diseases. One of these that can be avoided with the right diet, exercise, and supplements, etc., is avoiding coronary disease. So let's hear the interview with Jim and Dr. Drew Collins.
Each year, 600,000 people die of heart disease in the United States. That accounts for one in every four deaths. More than half of the deaths due to heart disease were in men. And 720,000 Americans have a heart attack each year. Coronary heart disease alone costs the United States close to $110 billion each year. That includes the cost of health care services, medications, and lost productivity. Joining me on the program today is Dr. Drew Collins from the San Diego Clinic of Preventive Medicine. And doctor, how much of this that we see in heart disease today is due to hereditary factors, and how much of it is due to lifestyle, in your opinion?
Well, good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on the show again, and hi to all the listeners. You know, a huge part of what we're driven by is our genetics, and now there's a new field called epigenetics where you can actually change your genes with your lifestyle and diet and behavior. But let's say mostly you have to figure out what you inherited from your parents, and that's your job in your 20s and 30s and start realizing that you're looking like your parents. But if you have heart disease in the family, that's one of the first things that doctors want to ask. Is it hereditary? Are you going down the same path? So I would say you're given this body, and it's up to you to either fall apart right on schedule or change the program.
Part of it, as a doctor, you're going to look and see, gee, do you have a history of heart disease in your family? Because that's going to tell you somewhat genetically if you're predisposed to it. Now, let's talk about lifestyle. Obviously, stress, diet, lack of exercise. How much does that play in heart disease today?
Hugely. That's why you always hear, even places like Kaiser and the big insurance companies, it's to their advantage to get people walking and get their diet changed and de-stress, and everyone's hearing what they should be doing because they know that a little early on in your life makes a big difference in the outcomes later, and these are the kind of habits you start having to add to your behavior as much as possible and chip away at it. So you can't just do everything when you're 60. You got to start when you're 40. And it's even better if you've heard about it when you're 20. So that's the thing about lifestyle, is you chip away at it, and it doesn't happen easy. It's got to be taught. You got to model a behavior after somebody you like or your family or someone's told you, but it doesn't stick the first time someone tells you. So you got to keep hearing it from the public service announcements, from the doctor, from Oprah, from, you know, Dr. Oz and your friend, and, oh, I'm going walking. You want to go with me? And, you know, a cup of wine in the afternoon and stuff. You hear it over the popular culture, and pretty soon it's allowed that you're making these changes. But it takes years, really.
Dr. Collins, let's take a very famous politician, former President Bill Clinton. He had quadruple bypass. A year later, he had a collapsing artery, and he had to have a stent put in. But then a doctor got a hold of him, Dr. Dean Ornish. He changed his diet, and he's never looked better. So once you have clogged arteries, in the case of President Clinton, how long does it take to reverse it? And is it, in the president's case, reversible with exercise, the proper diet? It's my understanding he's a vegetarian now. But can you reverse the damage that is done over a lifetime of poor diet and stress?
Yes, but I always tell people that it has to be like an Olympic effort. So it's not that you can't take the body and turn it back to a pristine state. It's that most of us are hesitant to make huge changes in our social order or our behavior or whatever. So it's not that the tissue can't respond. And in the case of someone like Bill Clinton, he's an example of, I think he passed an executive echocardiogram before he went into this. And him and Tim Russert are a good example. They had these massive heart attacks after they passed the executive stress test because those pipes, those coronary arteries, and to a certain extent, the circulation in general, can adapt to a great extent without you knowing it. So the flow of blood through that demand for these people that might have been plugged, even as much as 70%, still there's elasticity and you can get the blood down to where it needs to get under stress. So you don't notice there's a problem until that last little breakthrough plaque that plugs the whole thing, and then you get a massive heart attack. So it's deceptive if you've passed some of these popular analytical tests to see how your blood's flowing without really getting down. And now the new technology looks at the thickness, the actual thickness and elasticity of those pipes, those arteries, and that's where everything's going. It's going to inflammation, and pathology accumulates way earlier, and there's even blood tests now, super sensitive blood tests. So you can get into a test now way, way, way early than Bill Clinton did and not be shocked by this thing. So to answer your question, though, yes, you can reverse it.
Doctor, I know there are a lot of tests that you go in on an annual basis for your physical. You know, you get your blood tests, you take a look at your cholesterol, your triglycerides, and all the things that doctors tend to look at. But there are some new tests. I'm trying to think of the machine. It's called an O-ring. It's almost like a short CAT scan, and it can measure the plaque in the main arteries. What about tests like that that can alert the patient to early detection of a possible heart attack or the onset of heart disease.
Right. Well, again, getting back to this key buzzword, inflammation now, and I think it's been on front of Time magazine and everything, is what used to be cholesterol, fat, and all that kind of stuff in the 70s and 80s, and now there's some good fats and bad fats. Now everyone's jumping on the inflammation bandwagon. And inflammation in most of these diseases can be accumulated through excess blood sugar and free radical damage and a lot of things that can get soaked up by the food and the diet and even some supplements. But to answer your question about the testing, there's a tremendous availability of blood tests that screen for this inflammatory markers, very specific about the coronary arteries and heart disease specifically. The one to kind of have your listeners take home is the CRP, C-reactive protein. That's probably available to people who have insurance and they want their doctor to bump it up a notch because a lot of the new sophisticated stuff won't be covered yet. So you can go in and have a soup-to-nuts buffet of new neat tests that will tell you the gnat's eyebrows of what's bad or right, but you won't get it covered and it might end up being expensive. But if the C-reactive protein, and they say highly sensitive or highly specific for the cardiac system, is available now, and that's way better than saying, oh, my cholesterol or even some of these other things, and they just often don't want to pay for it because it's a little more expensive and kind of outside the box. But that's enough in the conventional wisdom now that that's a marker for inflammation. So C-reactive protein is one that everybody can go and ask for. They also want to keep their blood sugar levels in check. Insulin levels, there's another one called hemoglobin A1C that everybody can ask for. That's pretty much conventional wisdom enough now that good doctors are asking for that. That's a long-term view of how much sugar's in your system and literally sticky blood is inflamed blood. And then as far as the radiological or high-tech type tests that you're asking about, there's a thing called a coronary intimal medial thickness scan. It's not an ultrasound like blood flow. It actually shows you the thickness and you can see the plaque and the vulnerable plaque and the soft plaque, they call it, in the coronary arteries, and it's non-invasive, kind of an ultrasound test, but it's very specific and actually can see what's going on in your thickness and how elastic or lack of elasticity it has and how much accumulated plaque, they can actually see the plaque. And then there's basically CAT scans and other versions of that where you can do dye and be a little more invasive, intravenous dye, and then they do a CAT scan on you. So all those things are available, and the only thing stopping it is people usually want to have their insurance cover it or Obamacare cover it or whatever. No, usually those yeses happen at a much lower level of basic tests. And so the one that I think would be available to almost anybody is the C-reactive protein and the hemoglobin A1C. Almost every doctor in every town in the country would know what that is and would probably wince a little bit and say, yeah, let's look for that. Those are way better than the old-fashioned just HDL and LDL on the cholesterol. But if you want to really get down to specifics, they have companies now that draw blood, and you have to have a requisition from a doctor. But they'll look at every imaginable little fragment of the lipids in these little balls called low-density lipoproteins, and high-density lipoproteins are actually little cholesterol and phospholipid balls. And the ratio and the bands of lipoprotein around them, they can analyze every one of those things for doctors that like to do that. But again, those type of things are usually considered not mainstream. They are real, and they're really good to help you get very specific about your risk. So you can do blood tests. Then there's low-invasive ultrasound called CIMT, and then there's any number of things that are more invasive like CAT scans and that kind of thing. So it depends on how you're paying for it and where you live and what doctors are doing it.
Doctor, this CRP, is this something that should be done every single year, just like when you go in for your annual physical, you have your blood drawn?
Yes, that's one that they should put on there. Just like everything else, there's whole regions of screening. Like they'll do TSH, which is a thyroid hormone that comes with the pituitary gland, thyroid-directing hormone and thyroid-secreting hormone. And they'll just check that in the blood to see if the whole thyroid system is okay. And that'll be on a panel. So you'll do a once-a-year panel. And the CRP would be very appropriately the one test to check a lot of things. And the hemoglobin A1C, nowadays, doctors are asking for that because that's way better than just a snapshot of your blood sugar. So your answer is yes. And places like Life Extension, which is a membership-based thing where they can do lab tests for you, we'll throw that in there, and even things like testosterone and some of the other male hormones or female hormones, it's starting to become, it's a boutique, you know, everyone's asking for it, who knows the business, but now more and more people are starting to get those on panels, And you're right, that should be once a year type of thing.
Doctor, let's assume that your blood tests come up and it shows that you're prone to heart disease, your cholesterol, your triglycerides. What would be the first steps that, let's say, a patient would want to take to make sure that they're on the path to recovery? Are there things they can do to clean out their arteries? Obviously, if you change your diet and stop eating fatty food, you start losing weight, you start exercising, you're going to help your good cholesterol versus bad cholesterol. There's supplements. I mean, what are the steps? Let's say I come in to see you. You do this test, and it shows that my cholesterol is high. My CRP test looks risky. What do you recommend?
Okay, well, it's like anything else. It's like saying, I want to be a singer. So there's, you know, singing in the shower, then there's all the way up to Battle with the Stars in Hollywood. So a person who comes and asks the doctor for help, they usually do blood tests. And the blood tests are, as we said, basic all the way up to $1,000. And then there's usually a dialogue of like, well, this shows you the state that you're in as far as inflammation and as far as hereditary, you know, tendencies and that kind of thing. So it's very easy to get to the level of conversation where you and a doctor are talking about blood work. And that's what we do in our office. The next level is when it comes to heart disease or diabetes, which is kind of like one leads into the other, we have a thing called chelation here. And I know that we've talked about that a lot. Chelation is a little bit controversial, but a lot of people have done it, hundreds of thousands of people. And the idea is that you're taking heavy metals out of the body, and the heavy metals are one source of inflammation and toxicity, like lead and cadmium and mercury, and that's the thing. You're not supposed to have any in there, but we all accumulate it. So intravenously or even orally, there's EDTA, which is a molecule that attaches to the positively charged heavy metals. So depending on the person and depending on what's going on with their feedback with the lab work, we often suggest, look, you need to find out if you have heavy metals in you as one of the risk factors. So we do an actual challenge. They take EDTA intravenously. They pee out the heavy metals that's attached to the EDTA, analyze it, we can tell which heavy metals are there and how much it's going to take to get it out of there. And besides supplementation, everything from garlic to hawthorn berry to phospholipids to carnitine, there's wonderful amino acids and plants and protovitamins and all sorts of things that are very good for heart disease as well as metabolic syndrome, diabetes, that kind of thing. So we recommend supplements. Then we also talk about intravenous work here. The intravenous work not only gets rid of the heavy metals, but also supercharges them with things like arginine. Arginine is an amino acid that works with nitric oxide. It dilates the peripheral capillary bed, gets blood to where it isn't. So if someone's having angina or chest pains, you know, they used to take the little nitro pill under their tongue. That's the same idea. But arginine is a safe thing that we can do intravenously. You can actually take it as pills. So we're very cardio-nutritionally oriented, and we like working with, for example, Dr. Sinatra's got books out there. He's a metabolic cardiologist. He's got a lot of programs out there that you can get a handle on. And it's very similar to that. We do supplements, and we do intravenous things, and we do lifestyle stuff. Gets back to gentle walking at first, eventually a little more light weights, free weights, a little resistance training. We don't do that here, but that's lifestyle stuff. And it's slow for each person, but they can start turning around where they pretty quickly don't have the chest pains. They're still kind of at risk. You mentioned cholesterol. Let's say their triglycerides are all off. Sometimes it's a thyroid problem. Sometimes it's not as easy as just saying, oh, don't eat fat, because there's good fats that we got to introduce. There's a nutritional conversation there. So it's a lot of stress because it's different, and often they have to pay money because we're a cash practice here, but whether they go to their cardiologist or their nutritionist or their chiropractic physician or whoever they go to, they're going to be having a dialogue where someone's going to tell them to do things that they may not be doing, and that's where the stress level goes up, because often we go home and eat a donut because we had a bad day, or last thing we want to do is go out and walk outside of the house when we're grumpy. But if you're on the program where you're either afraid of dying or you're watching somebody else get healthy and you want to do it too, that's where you need the coaching, and that's often where some people are successful and some people aren't, and they're trainable or teachable, and doesn't matter really how bad you are. If you're ready to change and, you know, you'll listen, then we can take amazing turnarounds. And some people might not be very trainable and they may not be that sick, but they don't change because they're blocking every step of the way. So for us, when they come here, we do lab work. We talk about chelation because we're specialists in that. We talk about heavy metal toxicity. We talk about getting cardiac metabolic nutrition into them. And then we direct them to different things like lifestyle things, and we direct them to things like going back to the gym, or they might go to Pilates, or they might do something like walking and doing social interaction with people. So part of being healthy is getting back into your world, and doesn't mean you can't be stressed at work. I mean, there's a sort of a in-the-game part of being active that we don't tell them not to do. You don't have to be quiet all the time. It's actually good to kind of stimulate yourself. So we're not opposed to people working hard, and we're not opposed to people getting angry, and we're not opposed to people getting their heart rate up, but the idea is you want to have balance. So some of what people haven't learned in our culture is balance. I'm a naturopathic doctor, so the idea is we're following the courses of nature and the things that you can see as far as animals and seasons and natural behaviors. And so we can address things like, oh, you're not sleeping. Well, that's going to be a problem for your total goals. So even though we come in for their heart, they aren't sleeping. That's got to be addressed. And that's a classic example. Or something like, I never eat breakfast. Well, you know, even though you may not want to eat breakfast or you never have, that's going to be a problem as far as the long-term sugar in your body. So it's nutrition, it's lifestyle, it's what you're worried about. If they come in with pathology like pains in their chest, or they just came from a cardiologist and they got a stent in their heart, a lot of times we get them when they're not healthy. That's the problem. They've already, you know, had their fun, and now they're 75, and now they're saying, hey, I want to do something natural. So that's a little harder, but unfortunately, they don't come in often when they're 20. So for us, we have to use a little more advanced and interventive things like IVs or concentrated supplements. But if they're 20, and they do have heart disease in their family, they can do some simple stuff, you know, fish oils and a few supplements and this and that, and get into the light exercise stuff and baby into it so it's not so dramatic. But like I said, we usually get them when they have some pathology already.
Let me bring up an individual who was a patient of one of your predecessors at the clinic, and that's somebody that's well known in the financial world, which is Richard Russell. He had bypass surgery. I think it was his fourth heart attack, he wrote in his newsletter, where his attorney said, you know, get your financial affairs in order. He discovered one of your predecessors there at the clinic and discovered chelation. And over a period of time, he has gone through chelation. His arteries have been cleaned out. And, you know, that was age 70. Richard is in his 80s today and quite healthy. He changed his diet. So even though you may have a history of heart disease and, let's say, lifestyle bad choices that you've made, whether it's diet, you've got hereditary factors working against you, maybe you had stress, he was able to turn it around. And gosh, you know, at age 70, when his attorney was saying, get your financial affairs in order, here he is, what, 12, 15 years later.
Yeah. Well, that's not uncommon. And again, they're teachable. And usually people who are entrepreneurs are very savvy. They come in, they go, look, I'm in charge of this. And what do you got? And we lay it out for them. And they said, yeah, I agree. I just researched that on the internet. So they come in with like an inch thick of documents. And they know what they want by the time I talk to them, usually. And that goes very quickly and well, and it's fairly comfortable to make changes because they're ready to go. So again, even though they were 70 and they've kind of accumulated a lot of bumps and lumps along the way, with the formulas that we use and the quality of supplements that are being made now in the marketplace, you can get some dramatic changes, and the body's amazingly resilient. It wants to get better. So we don't worry if someone comes in and they're very bad off if they got the right mind, you know. Cardiac disease is hereditarily given to you, and then you spend a whole long time getting sick from it, meaning like 30 years or 40 years, and it takes time to reverse it, but you can reverse it. It just nicely reverses if you do all the right things, but you have to participate. So that's the problem. And the people who are usually small business owners where it matters, you know, they have to take care of their own health. They've usually thought outside the box. People have traveled. People who are usually, like I said, entrepreneurs get it as far as the accountability and the fact that it's on their shoulders to really do the stuff at home. Because no matter how many times you go to the doctor can only see you so often, but you've got to do it one walk around the block at a time. And that's what the decision is based on. So health comes from their own behavior. We can direct them, and amazing things can happen. I had a guy who had, I think it was four stents in his heart, and, you know, they were going to do a bypass. They almost never do bypasses anymore, and he basically could have died any minute. And he ended up doing our program, and he ended up walking the whole Spanish Pilgrim's Path, which was like 600 miles of gentle walking, but we got him up to speed where he survived that and was better than ever. That was a life goal of his. You know, he doesn't have any heart pain anymore, but you know, he got busy. He took a handful of supplements. He got tons of chelation. He did everything we told him to, and we still were crossing our fingers because he was so bad when he walked in. But he had a goal 6 months later that he was going to walk this, you know, spiritual journey in Spain, and it worked out for him. So, and he was not a young guy. He was a super stressed out guy in his 70s. But he changed. You know, got rid of the stress, for one thing. That's one of the things that he had to do for him. And this pilgrimage thing was his goal, so he got it.
So, Doctor, I guess maybe the key things are, because we've seen, I'm trying to think of the actor that played Tony in The Sopranos, who died unexpectedly in a heart attack.
Yeah, Gandolfini.
Yeah. And the other thing that we're seeing, too, is, and I've seen it, where people are dying of heart attacks at a younger age, in their 40s. So, no matter what your age, I guess the first thing you should be aware of, what you're telling me is, does heart disease run in the family? So if you had a grandfather or a father had heart problems, a mother, grandmother, that's your first alert that, hey, maybe I could have those genes too.
By 35, you've already got atherosclerosis in your coronary arteries. So if you got it in your family, then you've already got it, unless you were raised by Mennonites or something and you only eat foreign fresh food. But even then, so it's not as easy as just saying, oh, I eat good food. It's, your tendency is to accumulate inflammation in those places of your heart, which is a bad deal. But then the good news is you're probably not going to die of cancer. So if you can get on it and get after what causes atherosclerosis, and some people say it's just a vitamin C deficiency. You know, some people say it's an inflammation thing. It's multifaceted. You know, homocysteine, there's different genetic markers, which we can check now. Poor methylation, all these kind of things are many daggers coming at the heart that you got to keep an eye on. Vitamin D levels, we're finding so much more about vitamin D. So just going into it, if you know that both sides you have heart disease and you're 25 and you're looking around at life and thinking I'm invincible, that's when it's reasonable to start going down a list and checking off some of the boxes, dietary changes, behavior, et cetera. Often you don't even have doctors that you talk to when you're in your 20s. But it's already happening. If you're living the high life, it's already happening that you're accumulating heart disease silently. And by the time you're 35, you could have a heart attack because your coronary arteries are already plugged. Even though you look young, it could happen. So it's not such a shock that whatever James's age was in his 40s or whatever, that's not shocking to me that he would die of a heart attack.
So the first step is to take a look at your health history, hereditary factors that may come into play with your parents. The second thing you should do on your physical, and let's remind our listeners for that, because everybody usually when they go for their physical, they check, you know, your cholesterol,
yeah,
what's your good guys, what's your bad
right
guys, your triglycerides. You're suggesting another test, the CRP, which sort of measures inflammation.
And that's enough on the buzz now that the average doctor will know what it is, and you could ask, and they'll, like, even for Kaiser or something, they'll say, oh, yeah, we'll throw it in. They don't want to throw it in because it costs more than just a cholesterol, but it's way more information. And the other thing that's just entry-level information is how much sugar you have in your bloodstream, and that's what causes inflammation for the average person. I mean, infection notwithstanding, let's say you don't have an infection or something. Most people don't have that going on, but the average 30-year-old who gets a blood work once a year or something, besides just, oh, you're fine, your cholesterol's fine, you want to ask for a couple more things. And one of them I would say is figure out this CRP thing, figure out the hemoglobin A1C, and that's like how much sugar you got floating around on an average, which does tend to make inflammation and does tend to make heart disease. So that's a big one to catch on a low-level screen before you do all these elaborate other stuff. Which you could do. I mean, come in at 25 and say, hey, I've got $1,000, you know, run every test in the book. But most people don't think that way.
There's enough buzz on the CRP test today so that if you go in, let's say you're a member of Scripps, you know, some of the HMOs, if you request that as part of your physical, most doctors will go along with that?
Yes. And the hemoglobin A1C, too. They know what it is. They'll do it. And that's a lot of information. That's a whole nother chunk of information that this screening, this inflammatory concept, and you're catching it early. And there's a few other things. There's things like genetic markers now that are a little more out there. They have to have a different test. It's like a cell test, a genetic test. But there's things to screen things. More and more epigenetics where people are being able to be singled out and say, oh, you're at higher risk for this because, you know, you're this one person that's this genetic marker. So with all the research that's coming up now, there's tests as well as drugs that are making it easier and easier for people to be treated before they get bad. And the problem is that if you don't ask, if you're not interested in this, and you wait for your average doctor to tell you, they're 10 years behind. So you're going to miss out on early preventative stuff that you could be getting just because you didn't ask for it. And the other doctor was encouraged not to do more tests or encouraged to do less tests, right? Which is a cost-cutting thing, but at the same time, you're the squeaky wheel. So you're saying, hey, look, I'll pay for this on my own, or I'll go around the corner and get it somewhere else. That's the people that usually are winning the game, is the one that don't wait for everybody else to catch up. They're out there asking.
So as we sum up, there's a couple things you can do if you're predisposed. Number one, look at heredity. Take a look at your genetics in your family. Secondly, the CRP test that you can get done. And I think maybe the good news here is, no matter what your conditions are, if you're diligent and consistent, you can reverse heart disease, as we're seeing in so many people, whether it's Richard Russell at age 70 after his fourth heart attack and bypass surgery. Now living into his 80s, we're seeing Bill Clinton looking healthier than ever. Doctor, are there any books out there that you recommend that our listeners might want to read?
Well, I mentioned Dr. Steven Sinatra, MD. He's a metabolic cardiologist, and anything like the Sinatra Solution, these are easy reads because he puts it in a layman's term, but it's basically his transformation. He's got a couple books out. His transformation from a regular cardiologist to now a metabolic or a nutritional cardiologist, where he sees how we can get in early and prevent this disease stuff, or even when they have disease, of keeping them from progressing to early death. So anything by Sinatra, just like Frank Sinatra's spelling, you can get it in Amazon or in Barnes & Noble, whatever. And that gets you used to saying words like carnitine, which is a supplement that's super important for the metabolic activity of the heart muscle, or arginine, which is important for nitric oxide distribution at the tips of the circulation where you get more blood flow down to that cardiac muscle so it doesn't scream at you. Magnesium, all these wonderful electrolytes that we are depleted in. Even good old-fashioned garlic and hawthorn are old herbal friends. So he's not opposed to talking about herbs. He's not opposed to talking about research. And you can kind of take that book and plop it on the table of the doctor that you're seeing and go, hey, see this stuff they're talking about in here? Can't I get this too? And there'll be kind of a grumbling and a few blushed cheeks because you caught them without being aware of what's the latest thing. But if you're not too rude and are willing to maybe pay a little bit extra, you can get the most cutting-edge stuff. And I will just end by saying, if you stay around another 10 years, if we can keep ourselves alive, there's such amazing stuff coming out of medicine from like the stem cell division of research. And we worked with Dr. Howe here, who works with cardiac myocytes, and what we can do with people's hearts, even in their 80s, by regenerating from the baby stem cells on out to brand new cardiac function. So if you can hang around long enough, that's spreading all around the world, and better lab techniques and better availability for people, it's going to be a really remarkable cardiological opportunity very quickly. So just stay alive another 5 years, is what I'm saying to the people who are in their 80s and kind of saying, well, what's left for me? So every 5 years is like doubling and tripling what's available.
This is the great thing that we're seeing with medical advances today. We have better screening, we have better testing, we have more knowledge. And also, there are things that you can do from supplements, from lifestyle, from diet, exercise, where you don't have to rely on two of the favorite solutions, which is surgery and, take a drug. So there's a lot of good news coming here. Doctor, if our listeners would like to find out more about the work that you guys do at Preventive Medicine in San Diego, how could they do so, please?
Okay, so I'm Dr. Drew Collins, and I've been in practice about 30 years, so I've got a lot of momentum going here, and I'll come up with something no matter what. But we have a team of doctors here, and it's the San Diego Clinic of Integrative Medicine. And our email is info@sandiegohealthclinic.com. So that's sandiegohealthclinic.com. And our phone number is 619-440-3338. And we've taken patients, and we look forward to meeting people if they want to talk to us.
Doctor, well, listen, thanks so much for joining us on the program. And we wish you well, sir. And thanks for bringing us up to date on all the hopeful possibilities for combating heart disease. You have a great day.
Great. You too. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, that concludes my interview with Dr. Collins. I hope that, you get Dr. Sinatra's book, as he mentioned. And there are some new tests that are coming out. And please, don't be shy. Ask your doctor and become aware of these tests, because the simple cholesterol test are really behind the times today in assessing the possibilities of heart disease. And I hope you'll get Sinatra's book or get the CRP test and include that in your annual physical. Insist on it. After all, it's your life. Well, on behalf of Kathleen Harris and myself, Jim Poplava, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.